Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 119.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I am your host, Don Cardenas, and I hope you're going to have a fantastic week. So, you know, things are once again in full busy time swing here at Comics Coffee Metal. I was going to say Industries or Incorporated, but that sounds way too professional for what this is. Just really busy. Things are picking up again. I wrapped up Inks on Evie and the Helsings issue number 2. I think the whole book done. We're just on our way to get printed, and from there I have some commissions and stuff and some sketches to do for fulfillment, but I'm waiting on information for that. So, you know, there goes Evie 2. I'm also going to be breaking down issue number 3 very soon, and I am also getting ready to start inking Bend the Night issue 4. So yeah, very, very busy. On top of all of that, I am doing a podcast a week this month because I promised too many people an October slot and I wasn't paying attention. So rather than tell people no, I'm just going to suck it up and do some weekly podcasts this week and this month and have it be that way. So I'll be having a bunch of Comics Coffee Metal in your feeds this month. So, but they're all awesome guests, so I'm sure everyone will be very, very happy with the discussions and the people on. So there is that. Also, for the month of October, usually I do Rifftober, where I write and record a new riff and post it every day for the month of October. And this year I'm kind of abstaining from that because, one, just very busy, and two, I've been doing that for several years now. I want to say 6 years I've done it, and, you know, 6 times 3, you know, 6 times 31, I should say. That's a lot of riffs. And while some of them are just kind of, they are what they are, and some of them kind of like are similar to ones I've done years previous or whatever, there's a few that are really good, I think, and I really like, and I need to start finishing some more songs. So I'm kind of taking any time I would have given myself to do that this year and taking some of it and trying to rep songs. So hopefully I'll have a couple songs out before the year's end, as I hoped to do, you know, at the beginning of the year. So let's see if I can do that. There's one that's definitely going to happen. That is a song I am working on with Kevin Mellon. Something from last year's Rifftober, you know, something he really liked, and we started jamming on, and an opportunity came to make us finish it and put it out there for something. It's going to be really cool. It's definitely going to be out this month because it's kind of themed to this month. And I'm really, really excited for it. I've got it mostly done on my end. Kevin's going to do some vocals on it. And once he's done with the vocals, I'm going to go one more pass over any of the instrumental parts that I need to record a little bit better or whatever. And then he'll mix and master it. And yeah, it'll be out in the world. It's shaping up to be really, really fun. Really, really cool. Wait for that to happen. And of course, on top of all that, I have the second Evie and the Helsing song to finish up, which is pretty close to being done. So I'm, you know, giving that a little space to breathe since I have time before I have to give it out to everybody who backed the book. So, you know, I have a chance to kind of like sit with it for a minute. But yeah, that's happening. And then there's another song I've been sitting on that I kind of changed around the tuning of it a little bit. And it's kind of like reinvigorated my passion for getting it out. And I'm really looking forward to that. That one is going to be a little bit more difficult because I have to do some retracking of vocals, and my throat hasn't been super great the past, you know, few weeks. So kind of making sure that's rested up before I start destroying it again. So, but yeah, you know, the music front is, you know, we're getting some progress this year. We're going to have some stuff done, and there's a few other things that I'm hoping to get done by the end of the year. But as I always say, comic first. So, and there's comic stuff happening. So there we go. All right. So I have some really great interviews today with Sebastian Gerner and Kelly Williams about their great book, The Dead and the Damned, on Kickstarter. I also have a really fun Q&A with another creator coming right up. And I have a couple really good recommendations. So let's stop the yapping and get to the good stuff. All right. First up, I have a coffee recommendation. And it should be no surprise that this is coming from Rootless Coffee. Now, unfortunately, this roast is no longer available because it's a seasonal thing, but you should definitely keep your eyes peeled when it comes back again next year. And that is their cold brew roast. This is just absolutely phenomenal. This past summer, my wife and I, we really got into some cold brew stuff, and we actually got a little pitcher now that we can some cold brew pretty easily. And I went and ordered up some of the rootless stuff, and man, it's fantastic. It is really, really great. Kind of dummy to make. I've made it a couple different ways, different various formulations, so to speak, and each time it came out great. It is really, really good stuff. And you know, for me, I like a little bit of cream and sugar in there, and you know, towards the end of it, you know, because with the cold stuff, it doesn't really mix super well unless you're really, really diligent about it, and I'm not. So like towards the end, it almost became almost like a very cough board, but very like cold chocolate milky type of thing. And it was excellent. That was a really, really a really nice way to finish off the cup. But yeah, the cold brew crew from Rootless is fantastic. Again, I'm sorry, it's seasonal. It's not available right now, but I'm sure it will be back next year. And in the meantime, do go check out their Out of Your Element roast, which we bought up another bag of that. Very excellent medium roast. It's a great contrast to the Damn Fine Cup of Coffee medium roast they have. I kind of preferred the Out of Your Element when we were having it over the Damn Fine. I know my wife and I, we kind of like flip-flopped a little bit between the two roasts not too long ago, and I think maybe it's because I have Damn Fine every day, you know, pretty much. Having the Out of Your Element roast is a nice little change, but that's also an excellent one. They have a new Boo roast out for the month of October. I have not checked it out yet. I'm hoping to get a chance to do it, but from what I hear, it is absolutely excellent, so I expect nothing less from coffee. So yeah, definitely go check them out. I'll make sure there's links to their site in the show notes below. All right, so for my music recommendation this week, I had a couple that I wanted to bring up. And first up is the new one from Prong, State of Emergency. Prong is, you know, a long time metal band. They've been around for 30 plus years, I want to say. And they are very much the progenitors of that kind of, you know, I don't want to say of new metal because they're not new metal, but they really kind of popularized that earlier, just the drop tuning, grindy kind of, you know, very beat driven kind of stuff. They definitely have a direct line of influence to like early Godsmack and Static X. And they're a band that I always knew about, but I never really got into. You know, I was always more into the bands that they influenced, but over the past few years I've really, really gotten into Prong. I really enjoy them, and this new album, State of Emergency, it is definitely I want to say a return to form, because I don't think they ever really fell off, but it's definitely like a re-energized feel behind it all. It's very aggressive, very reminiscent of the earlier years of stuff in the best way. You know, Tommy Victor is just, he's just got one hell of a groove, one hell of a just like a knack for just writing, you know, simple, deceptively simple type of riffs that are just incredibly catchy, on top of just, you know, being very just aggressive with the vocals, but not put off. There's no like growling or anything. It's got that kind of older school feel with everything, and I'm really, really enjoying that. The title track and the track Descent are among favorites, and yeah, it's really, really good stuff. My second album I wanted to talk about was Errors by the band Capra. Now, Capra is more in the hardcore vein of metal. And if you're not familiar with that, I guess the best way I can describe it is it sounds like metal, but it's got like kind of like that higher type energy. The vocals are more yelled than growled or screamed. And for some people, myself included, for a long time, that could be kind of like your barrier of entry for that. You know, I was, you know, very much not into the style of metal, but there have been a few bands I've been turned on to, thanks to a good bud, Mark Bouchard. They told me about, you know, a few bands that I really, really dug. So when this album came along, a chance to preview and check it out. I gave him a shot, and yeah, Capra rips, man. It is really, really good. It really feels like that old school thrash era, mid 80s kind of stuff, with better production values, of course, and better songwriting, to be honest. And it's just really, really great. I would even struggle to call it really hardcore. It really feels like a descendant of Thrat more than anything else, but that's just my two cents. That's just my knowledge base of everything. But yeah, they are really, really good. I really, really enjoyed it. From the songs, Human Commodity, Slayer, Solana, just track after track of just really, really awesome stuff. High energy. And at only being 31 minutes, never overstays its welcome. Anytime, you're just really getting into the song, it feels like, you got the next one to start. And that's, to me, that's kind of a good thing, because I'm not tired of it. I want to go back and listen to these things again and again. So yeah, definitely check that out. Capra Errors and Prong State of Emergency, two really great albums that just came out. All right, so before our interview today with Sebastian Gerner and Kelly Williams, I have a special treat. I have a quick Q&A with writer Mark Bouchard. Some of you may know Mark is a former guest, amazing person, and just a really, really fantastic writer. They have an awesome new Kickstarter out for The Summer in Your Blood, a really, really cool-looking horror book set in a summer camp. So there's a lot of stuff that I have to ask Mark about with this book, and this looks really, really cool, so let's get right to it. Mark, thank you for taking the time to answer this Q&A. First and foremost, what is The Summer in Your Blood about, and who would you say it would appeal to?
The Summer in Your Blood is a cosmic horror summer camp slasher. It follows senior counselor Kelsey as she contends with the bodies popping up around camp, the work of the entity that has possessed her little brother, a 14-year-old camper named Eric, in an attempt to bring an end to all things. That's on its face. Beneath that, the sibling relationship between Kelsey and Eric is incredibly important to the story. There's a trans final girl, too, which sort of allows us to be in conversation with Sleepaway Camp a bit. I'd say that The Summer in Your Blood would appeal to fans of movies like Mandy and Fear Street 1978. Fans of cosmic horror and slasher movies will love this, especially if they're looking for something that feels familiar yet fresh, or hungry for queer rep in this kind of story. The biggest literary influences on the script were Liz Suburbia's Sacred Heart, Joey Como's Bible Camp Bloodbath, Maria Lovett's Loud, and Antoine Millard's Slash the Mole.
All right, that is quite the list to be in the same section with. So awesome, awesome. So looking at the preview and everything, the art by Thessalina Fletcher has a really great style that, well, normally seems like it would be at home in like a memoir style comic. It really, really is cool to see here, because it really ups the unsettling nature of the violence to a really great effect. Was Thessalina a part of the initial conception of the book, or did she come along later in the development process?
She came onto the project a bit later in the development, but Thessalina's art was on my mind from the day I started outlining. I was sliding Thessalina's work over to my friends, being like, what do you think about this for the summer camp book? Thessalina's contributions immediately elevated the book. It was her idea to do the ink slash the majority of the book in a muted green that grew more deep and foresty with proximity to the entity.
That's awesome. Yeah, the choices she makes throughout the art is just really, really fantastic. So I can't imagine anyone else doing this book. My next question is, so this is your third graphic novella. Do you intentionally aim for that of a story, or does it just feel like it's more of a natural format?
I both aim for that length, and it feels like a natural format. I think it's a really fun format to play around with, a book that you can easily knock out in one sitting. It just feels like there should be dozens of short graphic novellas on the stands, but we rarely get them in the direct market. Silver Sprocket is probably the only publisher that puts out multiple books of this format in a year. I'd love to see more books like this on the stands. Shake up the direct market.
100%. I love this format, and I definitely want to play with it myself in the future. Yeah, I totally agree with you. There needs to be more stuff like... So my next question is, from the body horror of It Took Luke to the horror comedy of Leaf Peepers, you have a knack playing with the genre in fun and interesting ways. Do you see horror as a launchpad for your stories, or is it an element that just seems to seep in as things progress?
It's always the launchpad, as in, I start out knowing I want to make a horror book. It's the most interesting genre for me to play around in, but also it starts to seep in more as things progress. For example, the entity trying to bring about the end of all things was not in the first pass on the script. It came about during the first rewrite while writing lines of dialogue for the entity. I found myself alluding to things I knew we wouldn't have time or space for in the book, and that sort of ramped up the deeper I got into rewrites. I appreciate the compliment also. I think the reason that my work in the genre comes across as funny slash fun slash interesting slash presenting a twist is that I don't really try to include jump scares in my horror comics. People talk about writing for the page turn like it's the end-all, be-all of horror comics, but to me that just reads as lazy, like a jump scare. As a writer, it's incredibly hard to influence the pace at which readers will read a comic. That is more the purview of the artist. What I can do to make sure I'm presenting readers with something fun and interesting is focus on the horror imagery, the fucked up stuff, if you will, the dialogue, and refining the high concept.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, you definitely seem to have, like I said, a knack for that. So I'm glad to see it's something you really, really enjoy playing with, and look forward to, obviously, reading the entirety of The Summer in Blood and whatever comes next. So finally, for my fifth and final question, this is more of a two-part question. Which camp slasher film is your favorite, and do you think you would be able to survive it?
Oh man, Sleepaway Camp is a classic, but I think my favorite is Fear Street 1978. No way I would have survived that one, though, on account of the dying being necessary.
Totally, totally. Well, these are all excellent answers. I am really excited to read the rest of The Summer in Your Blood. I hope everyone listening is too. The Summer in Blood is now live on Kickstarter right now. Please check out the link in the show notes below to make sure you pledge and get this thing funded and get a really awesome book in return. All right. Thank you, Mark. Today, I am joined by two very talented gentlemen. First up, we have my returning guest for the third time. Fantastic artist and bud, Kelly Williams. Kelly, thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I'm excited to talk to writer and editor and I guess publisher of the new imprint, Goats Flying Press. I should have clarified before we start recording. Is it Gerner?
Yeah.
Sebastian Gerner. Sebastian, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited.
Well, gentlemen, you have a really, really awesome new book coming out. Oh, it's actually out now on Kickstarter, The Dead and the Damned, and it looks amazing. You sent me a little preview of it, and, as usual, I always love Kelly's work, but the story behind this seems really, really, really cool, so I can't wait to dig into all that with you, but as is the rule of the show, gentlemen, I gotta ask, Comics, Coffee, Metal, what are you digging right now? We can start with Sebastian.
I just drink, there's just like an office space, they have like a free coffee dispenser, and I just chug it all day long. I don't know what it is, but it's keeping me going. Metal, I've been digging a Horrendous, the new album, which has a really big title that I don't remember. Three guys from Philly, they're really rocking. They put out one album every couple of years, and it's just really great stuff. And there's Cloak, which I really like. They do good stuff. And I wrote a lot of The Dead and the Damned while listening to it's this black metal. They're called Kaladin Brood. They dropped like one album like 10 years ago and then disappeared into the veil of time.
That sounds like black metal.
Yeah, it's really good. It's apparently based on a fantasy series that I just started reading this summer, called Malazan Books of the Fallen. So it's like very, like, it sounds super dangerous, but then you read the books and you're like, oh, these guys are just like huge nerds that love fantasy, and they just make like really grim black metal about it. So I have a lot of fondness for stuff like that. As evident with The Dead and the Damned, like something that is ultra grim and ultra violent and it's super bleak, but then once you scratch a little bit, it's just like, oh, it's just big old feels. So I don't know, that's been me. Reading comics is my job, so I have not read a comic completely for fun since I picked up these two, which I have out. Hideshi Hino, always a pleasure.
That's a great book.
Which is super weird even for him, but I dig it. And I picked up this one, Ryuko. This is really good. This is, I've never heard of this publisher, but this is a Japanese artist, but more of like everything. Paintings, sculptures, and he just decided to make a comic book one day and made this like badass kind of retro 70s assassin. It reminds me of Golgo 13, which is great, but really vibrant. It's really cool to see like someone come completely from outside of comics, but just like devastate because they have all this other experience from other, you know, art disciplines, and that's been really cool. So, and he's like on tour right now. I don't know. It's just fun. I enjoy reading books I know nothing about or don't know the creator or like have no preconceived notion of the plot at all, and just kind of dive in. And I think that, that's an experience that's pretty rare these days because you're so inundated with news all the time. So, and hopefully we'll be able to do something like that with The Dead and the Damned too, where I think that the preview I sent you is like the first, it's not quite half the book, 40 pages. I think it's like the first 18. It's like the big opening scene that obviously sets the tone and gets you a lot of great action. And Kelly just absolutely nailed it. Like battle scenes are an absolute beast to draw. After that, things quiet down in a certain way. And the characters kind of take over from there. So really, we're really hoping to take people for a ride. Because when you make a comic, and especially selling a comic, you're talking to retailers, you're talking to people, and they're like, what's the two sentence pitch? It's like,
I think at this point, there's been so much stuff that's out. That's like, you can't have that. Like, it's rare to have that two sentence pitch anymore. And you know what? If you can do it, great. But like, you know, I don't think it should be frowned upon if you have to like take a second, say, here's what the book's about. And then
I think if you can do it, and if it sparks joy, if it ignites something in the listener's mind, but if you're just kind of trying to shove too much sauces into too small of a casing, like it's, at some point you're just gonna, you know, for me personally, you know, the golden rule is always like create something that you like, that you would love to have seen. And I remember, you know, clearly I've sent it around to a couple of comic book creators, and someone wrote back and was like, is this just you doing like Army of Darkness meets Berserk? Damn it. As Berserk's like my favorite comic ever, and Army of Darkness is also such a weird, like if you look at that movie, and that movie came out in theaters, it's bonkers. Like, gonzo to me that movie exists and was in theaters, and I could have been in the theater sitting there. I was like 10 years old when that movie came out.
Being like, it was a good one to see in the theater too.
And I wish that they would do like a, you know, like a revival or something, just to be able to be like, this is a terrifying, hilarious movie. And I think the last time like a proper skeleton army was done in film, which has only been, I guess it's been done twice, once by Harryhausen and then once by Sam Raimi. And I, you know, we're not here to try and make this a movie, far from it, but I do feel like if all good things come in three, then The Dead and the Damned would be the prime vessel for another skeleton army, and arguably the best one to ever be on the screen.
Yes,
we need more skeleton armies for sure.
I've got half a mind to send, like, try to get a book to Del Toro and Leica. I feel like a stop motion skeleton army.
Yeah, why hasn't that been revisited yet by those gentlemen? Something has to. It seems.
I know people love all the stuff we love. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a hard. You know, I'm interesting because we're about to head up to New York Comic Con, where we'll be doing a lot more face to face presentation of the book and selling the book. And obviously, it's Halloween, and you know, got my skeleton here, and like people are open to it, but. You know, it's like with anything. I think it's like with metal. Like, people have a preconception of what it is, and then when you actually sit down and listen to a lot of it, listen to, like, not just the three bands that everyone knows of, but like, hey, check out what has been done with this style of music for the last 50 years. Like, it goes in a completely different direction. A lot of people who don't spend their days mired in that kind of stuff, like we are, you know, just need a helping hand. I hope that The Dead and the Damned can do that. It is a has a lot of great characters, a lot of great story. I just love to front load books with all the best shit so that people can get right in and have a good time.
Well, judging by the preview, you definitely front loaded it with some pretty badass stuff. So
it's funny because Kelly's working on a scene now. It's actually my favorite scene in that first book, and it's super quiet, and it's just four like skeletons on a beach chatting it up.
There's only four characters.
I know. It's not. It's not that many artists. I don't think there's any artists that would have taken this script and gone with it as hard as Kelly did, which is gobsmacking to me. Like just the work that he does on those first five or six pages is bonkers. It's the format that we're putting this book out. It's nice and big, thick paper. It's gonna feel big. I like nothing less than like buying a comic and it's just this like flimsy.
Yeah, yeah.
That only really works with manga where you're getting like a phone book of toilet paper and you burn through it and it's fine.
Yeah. I definitely feel that way with comics these days. It's like I need to have like a big, just floppy newsprint collection of whatever it is, even if it is American comics or whatever. Or it needs to be just like feel like a premium product to me. It needs to feel like this is something special. And I think that was one of the bigger turnoffs of me with buying single issues. On top of like a billion other reasons, but like that was definitely one of them. But the degradation of paper quality and cost and all that, and that's why I do mostly back things digitally with Kickstarter and all that. When I do something at a physical tier, I'm looking forward to it because even if it's print on demand or whatever, it's still grade stock that other people are using and things like that. So I definitely feel you there.
But, yeah, it's been tricky. The printer were. Set to use as a printer I've worked with a lot with my day job, which is also comics. I'm its editor-in-chief at TKO, and they do a really good job, so I was very excited to have an opportunity to do that. And it's just, I mean, we're going to be printing quite a few. Obviously, we're kickstarting the book now, but, it's not really print on demand. Like, we're going to be printing a fair amount of units, I think, for a first time DIY self-published comic book endeavor, so we'll have a good amount going even next year at conventions and stuff like that. No, don't know when people are going to be listening to this. Obviously, if you're listening to it right now, if you like it, please back our Kickstarter. Links will be out because it's been harder, I think, now than in the last couple of definitely in the last 6 months getting the word out, just because all the avenues that we've built up over the last 10 years, social media, websites, all that stuff's kind of breaking down right now through no fault of anyone.
No, it's abysmal out there.
A few individuals. And at the same time, there's so many more, crowdfunding, Kickstarter, both platforms and people doing it. So it's a pretty interesting time to launch something as bonkers as What's Flying Press and the Dead and the Dam, but I wouldn't have it any other way, because if we're here to make something safe and easy and contained, there's plenty of that already, and I don't think there's enough
I certainly don't envy anyone who's launching a Kickstarter. Like we just wrapped up our Kickstarter for the second issue of my book Evie and the Helsings in beginning of September, and even then, like, we just noticed like just the just the fast, like, just down. And even comparing like the stats of everything and seeing conversion rates from like Twitter and all that, like, it was like single digit conversion rates from Twitter as opposed to the previous book, which were vastly different. Granted, we had a lot of returning people anyway, so they're probably already part of a list or something. And this, I don't know if that counts, like the pre-signups, notify me. But even then, like, just getting traction on anything, like, I like Blue Sky a lot, but it's definitely not a place for marketing stuff yet.
It's turning into a different conversation. But no, I mean, it's the first
time. We're all in the same circle, essentially, over there, because
yeah,
it's not the broader comics community so much. It's still kind of small. So, yeah.
It's very much a life raft right now.
More than, I think more than any other time, that whole, you know, it's like screaming into a, I don't know, I forgot the analogy now, whatever. You know, like, it's pointless.
It's like,
just echo chamber, there we go.
Yeah.
Even more now than before, like on stuff like Blue Sky, it's more like an echo chamber because you're just talking to the people that already know anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reaching outside of comics on there, like, that seems like such a foreign concept to me. Like, I'm like, I don't even know what to do with that.
You have to consider that, like, even guys like me and you, like, there's people who are very, very good at social media. It's just a part of, I mean, there's entire careers is that, but even like in, say, our field, comics, there's people who are good at being good artists, being good writers, being good at the discipline of the actual comic, and then also being quite handily, you know, at like being a character on social media. But that still took, you know, we're looking at people who spent 10, 12, 15 years mm-hmm. building that following that they can,
right,
we're able to then bring over to, you know, a platform like Kickstarter or other crowdfunding. And now we don't have the platform anymore, and we also don't have the audience. Like, people that I should, good friends, like literally people I could walk down the street and talk to, are not seeing, you know, tweets that I'm sending out about this book, which just goes to show that, like, I think I might do like a mail write-in service. Everyone print out this thing and go hand this off to 10 people. Because maybe that's what we have to go back to, is just old-fashioned write-in, you know, stand soapbox. And
that's what we'll do for the second issue. We can put the mail-in thing for the second issue in the first issue.
Put $20 into an envelope and just send it over to us. Well,
yeah.
I'm open to try anything, you know. I think that one of the things I wanted to do with Goats Flying Press is just, I've been making comics for 15 years, and as deep as I have been in it, there's still elements of it, especially like in the sales, marketing, distribution, where I've always just kind of taken, you know, other people's word that's what works. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think anyone knows what works anymore at all. And it's not because it's just because things are so fractured and things change so quickly. And there's so many people who are like, move fast, break stuff. It's like, you can't break everything though.
Yeah.
Everything's broken. And here we are, and we're sitting on a book that I think is like one of the best things I've ever done. Definitely. Kelly's mileage may vary, but I think the work.
Oh, no, it's definitely up there.
Absolutely out. And I do think that we're launching it at a very difficult time. And yet I'm like more excited about it than ever, because it was for me about creating something that just sparks that dark joy. And comics evolve. I mean, I've been in comics for whatever I said, 15 years, and it's always been bad. So I've been told, like, every single year that I've been in comics, everyone around me has been like, well, comics are dead, pack it up. So I guess, you know, in a way, to bring it back around to a book about skeletons and the undead, like, I've spent my entire career in what I was told was a dead industry, I guess, because it wasn't as glamorous and glitzy as the 90s. Sure, when books were selling a million deep, but
that was all fake anyway, though. That was all speculation.
Golden Age, and every good fantasy story has a golden age, and then you've got the dark age, and I'm always a lot more about that. I want the, you know, Game of Thrones was a little too touchy-feely for me there. you had all these undead, you had them there, you had this awesome Ice King, and then it didn't pull through, and we're trying to salvage some of that. And also,
they barely used that Ice King, man. It was a waste.
He just showed up and did a little twirl, and then, you know.
We'll see how the actual true books handle that situation. If they ever come out. If it ever comes out.
you know, sometimes you can just write your own story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I won't see when it comes out.
I would have to reread all of those books. books from the start at this point. So I don't know. I mean, I've got the ending for The Dead and the Damned. You know, it proposed 4 issues. I think that obviously that might take us a minute, but I've got every one of the comics that I've written, and some of them have quite long arcs. But before I go on my deathbed, I can very quickly jot down, you know, the ending beats for everyone, so I don't take the ending of my stories to my grave with me. But hopefully, you know, we still have time, and we're about to head into New York Comic Con, which is actually a great way to just bring it back around, talk to people, get them excited about the book, and we have some ash cans, we've got some merchandise. I mean, we are a brand new publisher. This is something that I wanted to do, and Kelly is just an amazing collaborator and gracious to lend himself to the launch of this venture. But The Dead and the Damned is also just something we've been working on for probably 2 years now, between the first talks and then trying to find time to get some pitches done. And by the time the pitch pages were ready, I was just like so ready to go and not wait for an editor to read it and then get back to me and tell me that, can there be a love interest, or can there be two characters that aren't dead, which there totally are. It's a lot of characters that aren't dead yet in the book. So we just decided to go out and...
I swear
to God, the book starts with at least like...
Three or four
characters that are alive at the start of the book.
Well, you know, since we're talking about it, so The Dead and the Damned, was this something that you, when you first started with the concept, now that was Kelly like the first choice in your brain, or was it something that you just didn't know who you were thinking art-wise until, you know, a certain point?
It was always going to be Kelly. I write everything. I think everything I've developed like from the ground up has been for an artist, and usually I will come up with an idea or something like a theme or a log line or like a concept, something. I'll have something and I'll approach an artist that I think might be good or might be interested. And for The Dead and the Damned, I believe this is like during lockdown, like pretty, you know, dark COVID times when we didn't have the vaccine and it was all still very like, what is happening? We're all in shock. We're all like locked in our houses, you know, traumatized by that, everything that came before, everything that was going to come after. And also I was, my wife was pregnant with our first child, my son. And that's a lot of emotions to just kind of have pouring into you, where like the world feels very uncertain, very dark. I'm not the most optimistic person by nature. And here I have, you know, a child coming into the world, which is something I really wanted. But also before you both can vouch for that, before you've really experienced it, you don't have a frame of reference. And I was trying to find an outlet for that. So I decided to kind of try to do a story that's like as bleak as possible, but still pull back with a character arc that is relatable. So I figured, you know, and then my mind just goes to an extreme. Like, how about a world where, like, again, The Walking Dead, there's just too many. Sure, the zombies have taken over, but there's too many people. Like, there's still too much, like, oh, if we kill all the zombies, we'll be fine again. I just wanted to, like, upstage that and be like, no, nothing will be fine. You can't defeat them because they're dead. All you can do is join them.
Fuck your optimism.
I mean, that's the kind of the thing where it's just like, if you're just going to do the thing again, and you know, I really wanted to. I also, like, this is something I used to do when I was a teen, and I would, like, if I got into a really dark mood and I wasn't taking care of myself, and, you know, you're just a teen, you're kind of smothering yourself in those feelings. I tried to, like, outdo myself, almost like just burn it all off, like go to a really, really dark place and then feel a little bit better. And I can still sort of channel that. Anyway, having that, and Kelly and I have been talking about doing this or doing that. I wrote that to Kelly. I was like, do you want to do something like this? And to his credit, he was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then quite quickly, I, you know, was able to kind of bring the characters out and started doing some sketch work. But I cannot imagine another artist doing this. Not with this level of just treating the, like, Kelly is incredible at monsters, but he's also incredible at like everything else.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true, man. Like the level of just humanity that you bring to these, our four main cast, the pallbearers, who are all different. You know, we're kings and queens and warlords and priests, like just every level of like human height, everything you can achieve in life, wealth, power, glory, fame, you know, God, the standing of godhood. And then when you're dead, it's just nothing. Like you're just skin and bones, but you still need to convey the memory of that glory. Like I just don't know who else can do that in a way that one minute you're looking at a skeleton and he's laughing and his teeth are busted. And the next you're like, oh wow. Like, yeah, when we die, there's nothing left except the memory of what it was to be alive. Those are very, like, again, this is a comic book thing to like throw those two diametrically opposed kind of ingredients into a soup. But I think it's amazing. Like, and I'm really excited for people to read this and just be kind of like, what is this? I don't get it, but I love it. And there's a ton of skeletons. So what more do you want?
No. And, you know, Kelly knows I'm, you know, will always, you know, praise his work whenever I come across it, whenever I see it. And, you know, this is definitely, you know, easily some of the best stuff I've seen from Kelly. You know, I can tell that, you know, you're vibing on this. You're really into it. I really like the decision to kind of just have, you know, essentially black and white, but obviously we have these pops of, you know, the blood and then the blue and like kind of the mystic kind of stuff. Was that something that was kind of discussed prior, or Kelly, did you just like, you know, here's what we're doing and just, you know, blow Sebastian's mind with it?
Well, if I remember correctly, I had thought about it, but I think at the time we hadn't started putting anything down on paper yet. So, you know, and I think I actually was, I don't know, I was like whining on Twitter about just wanting to do like black and white and, you know, maybe some spot color red type stuff. Like I just kind of missed doing the ink wash stuff and like just the kind of monochromatic thing, like the simple and then focusing on using the different color elements where it matters or to help with separation and stuff. And like, I think almost immediately Sebastian was like, why don't we just do that with this? And I'm like, okay, yeah.
That was easy.
Yeah, I think it was, I misremember the mythological origins of my own books, but I think it was something where like Kelly took three steps towards me and I was like halfway like, oh yeah, that's, you know, wasn't that my idea? But I love the idea because, again, in the story, the sense is that this hasn't just happened, like the curse of the dead. Like this has been going on for centuries, where everything that dies comes back and attempts to take you with it, essentially. So not just the kind of, as a writer, like the story ideas of like, yeah, how does that work? Like people will still be born and die. You can't. You know, there's not going to be any like funeral fanfare for your grandma because you're going to have to make sure that she stays down there. And then after centuries of that, like the world would just be sapped of life again, just like draw all the color out of it and make it very bleak, but still like have those pops of color around, you know, the blues and the reds, like there's still life in there. Again, that's kind of the tone I wanted to go for, is that as doomery as you want to get, and there's plenty of reason to feel that way, you're still here, and every day you are is a good day, and things can change, and we can change them. So all of a sudden, the Dead End of the Dam becomes this entirely different, tonally, this entirely different book. But what I do really like, because I'm a huge fan of Kelly's watercolors, colors in general, just the spot beauty that he can bring to it, is that any flashback to, you know, and during the throughout the course of the book, will flashback to the lives of our four main characters before they landed in the grave. And all the flashbacks will be in full color, which, again, usually in comics, flashbacks are like sepia toned or black and white. Yeah. And we're just going to inverse that, where our present day is as bad as it gets. Actually, it gets significantly worse before the end, but spoilers.
Nice. I also appreciate, Kelly, even though, you know, it is, you know, predominantly ink wash, like even the choice of using like a warmer gray for the sky in the battle, like it really just adds so much more to the, just the depth and the, just the overall feel of everything. It makes everything feel not only sapped of life, but also just like really dirty and just like everything's just extra, extra bleak.
One of the things that I think is always in the front of my mind when I start on like one of these pages is, I think I start nervous that I'm not going to make it look dirty enough, you know, like, cause I don't want it to seem like this artificial thing that like, I just drew this like landscape and then, oh, it needs to be dirty. So I got to go in and like do things to make it look worn or whatever. It feels better if it's like worked into it as you're doing it. And it also kind of helps inform going forward, like what things look like and stuff. So, but yeah, that's like the, of all the challenging aspects of this, which there are plenty, you would think that I'd be the most stressed out about all of the like battle scenes and stuff, because it's not like I've done a gazillion of those, but it's the dirty. I just want to make sure it's believably dirty and lived in, you know?
Well, I mean, the battle scenes are pretty damn epic, you know, and, you know, kind of talking about, you know, Army of Darkness and stuff like that, like, you know, this is definitely, you know, easily my favorite depiction of a skeleton army, those bastard skellies. You know, but it's wild because, you know, I guess, knowing your work, maybe you haven't done a ton of huge battle scenes, but I never would have thought like, oh, I wonder if Kelly would have trouble with that, just because I just knew you would kill something like that, and you easily did. Like, it's big and epic. It feels like it feels like this massive event happening, and then, you know, you weave it in really well with, you know, the moments in between, the more direct moments between the characters as things start to kind of, you know, when they think the tide is turning a little bit and all that, and then, you know, won't say much more from there, but, you know, it's an amazing looking book. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we can have books like this, you know, for, you know, because you mentioned something, Sebastian, about, you know, kind of making the book you want, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, so things, and that's what I love so much about independent comics is, you know, these are all books that I know people want to read. And that's the books I want to make, is the books I want to read. And so I feel like it's just, you know, again, no knock to any bigger publisher book, because there's plenty that are really good, I'm sure, and enjoyable. But like when it comes down to like this, the pure passion behind a thing and all that, it does color my opinion of like, okay, I might like this a bit more because someone is so intent on telling us this story that they really want to have out there, that it just gives, to me, it just gives an extra sense of urgency to want to read that, as opposed to, oh, Wolverine's alive again. Oh, Wolverine's dead again. You know, and again, not knocking any of that at all, because I've certainly have read my fair share of that stuff, but it's just, that's what I'm really drawn to. And that's what this book kind of like really feels. And it's just seeping out of every page. And again, you know, I could just gush about Kelly's art forever. But, and I do appreciate that. that from the previews, it looks like you guys are really preserving the texturing and the quality of the work of the washes and stuff like that. It's not just getting super contrasted and saturated, so the blacks are just pure black. You know, we're seeing the variations in the brush and stuff like that. And that's the stuff that, you know, I absolutely love when whenever I see that with this type of work. So I have to bring that up.
I've got a little ash can here. We're actually going to have these at New York Comic Con. If any listeners, viewers are going to be at New York Comic Con next week, please come see us. Table B43 in Artist Alley. And these are, because we went completely DIY, these are actually in complete black and white, just grayscale, and it still looks really good.
Yeah, when I saw the grayscale, I was like, fuck, we should have just did that.
We just done that. When they put Fury Road out in the black and white, like the what was called black, white, and chrome.
And so we just do another Kickstarter for the black and white version of the book.
You know I want an artist edition of this at some point, just like,
right, yeah. Black and white.
Look, sky's the limit. It's just, you know, the irony being that we're talking about.
I love like, that the sky's the limit for us is like black and white.
Black and white, no color. Yeah, but like I have to think back when Don was saying about books that just you can feel. One of the books that it hugely inspired me when I was a kid, and I remember reading it dog-eared. Like, I don't know where I got it, but it was like the full James O'Barr Crow. And I remember that book because it's so raw. Like, his style changes over the course of pages from one to the next. He'll do like kind of a flat approach, and then the next one is like cross-hatched all to hell. And it doesn't matter. Like, all of that would buy modern day definitions of like making comics. It was like, oh, this is indie or this is underground. And I was like, no, this is fine. This is fine art. This is someone like pouring themselves into a page about an undead rock and roll mime who was avenging his like. Again, it's just it's the rawness, and it's just like here's a piece of this person's heart and soul and brain on a platter, and he's sharing it with us. And long term, like, I love me some high gloss, I love me some fine production values and all that stuff, but like, I don't know, I think at the end of the day it's just certain stories speak to me, and certain art styles, it just evokes something in me that I want to experience, and I want to help other people experience with, you know, my own twist on it and our thoughts and Kelly's artistic impulses. And then Kelly can do anything. Superheroes, can do drama, crime, obviously got his proclivities for horror, but like to sit down and do a battle scene between like a couple of human, like half starved, frozen to death humans and a million different zombies and skeletons. Not everyone can do that. You gotta have it in you, you know?
It lives.
I was gonna make some sort of joke about Kelly's got that dog in him, but I had to stop myself. Even though I just said it. I can't imagine, you know, just reading this book, I can't imagine anyone else's style working so well on this book and pulling all that, because again, we keep coming back to the, oh, it's because I said dog.
Maybe.
Because, you know, we keep coming back to the battle scene, but like it really does. It has that epic feeling of like, you know, Lord of the Rings battle scene, but it also has that real like just like dingy, dirty, lived in feeling of, you know, the Army of Darkness and stuff like that, where it just kind of has that
fantasy films that they like had to shoot in like an actual, like they had to find a field and run a thousand extras across it, you know. Obviously Conan, but even prior to that was like Krull, Hawk the Slayer, or the Excalibur film. Like those had very distinct, like they had to get creative about like, how do we make this look like a fantasy? Because we don't have CGI blue screens and all that stuff that
2 million people
just like render the eyelashes on the dwarf for, you know, another month or two. And ultimately, yeah, sure. You've got something that sucks up a lot of money and probably makes you a lot of money, but I don't know. I'm aiming for a classic, you know. I want to like Conan is a movie I rewatch, maybe not every year, but I'll throw it on, and it's different. Like, I don't rewatch certain types of movies that much. Obviously, everyone rewatches films like from their youth, but there's always something to discover in there because they genuinely had like, I don't know, 400 extras for Tulsa Doom's Temple, and just that energy is palpable. I think that you put into something, and running everything through a rendering machine is, I don't know, you lose the energy, right?
Yeah.
This guy to like turn and like face me. So
yeah, especially when it feels, you know, very cut and paste with everything and so. I mean, there's ways I'm sure of doing it, you know, with effects that, you know, feel more, you know, naturalistic or something like that. But, you know, it's cut and paste. No one has time. Everyone's underpaid, you know, speaking of like, you know, terrible industries.
Well, I think in horror, especially like you've got a movement going back to classic, like practical special effects for the kind of the nostalgia value. But also I think because people are like, this is fun and it's effective and there's a fan base out there and all of this is spinning into a bigger story about, I think, like just people connecting with each other and technology while it gives us the opportunity to do stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Too much technology, like you just lose sight of all the people, be that in art, you know, with the entire AI bubble that they're trying to get us to swallow. And at the end of the day, I think that, yeah, Kelly could have made some kind of copy paste skeleton thing, but instead he went and penciled every single every single shin bone, every single.
I don't know how to copy and paste, so. I mean, unless it's literally like photocopying and like pasting it onto the page.
Even that.
You hit on something. It's like appreciating like the work and like the artistry that goes behind things. And it being October, you know, my wife and I were usually like, oh, let's you know, trade off, you know, horror movies every week to see, you know, for our movie time or whatever. And her and I have such differing opinions on what we like in a horror movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up with, you know, access to too much cable, so I had too much schlock is in my brain to, you know, so I appreciate the, it may not be a good movie, but it has that one really cool effect, or it has that one really cool, you know, kill or whatever. And, you know, she likes the more cerebral horror, psychological, almost possession type stuff. And for me, that's just like, I'm going to be out in the first half hour snoozing with that. So it's hard for us to kind of find that middle ground. And since we've mentioned
that's a hard middle ground to walk. That's like horror comedy, you know, that tried, but it's really hard to do right.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I've got a lot of good memories of you like that type of movie, like the schlocky movie where they're like, okay, we're going to save our budget for like one kill or one monster.
Yeah.
Everything around it is kind of just suspense. Like we build up to it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I think when Sebastian and I first like started talking and stuff, like, you know, in the beginning, like, I mean, when we first met or whatever, I think one of the big connecting things that we connected over was Street Trash.
Oh yeah,
and
it's like a whole prequel sequel side story that we should do. Who's got the rights to Street Trash?
Man, I don't know, but
who's gonna admit they have the rights to that?
What's Flying Press is open to doing licensed work if it's Street Trash.
I'm only doing licensed work if it's Street Trash.
Yeah, that's still. I remember we had a pretty neat idea of doing like a Vietnam.
Well, oh yeah,
the origin of the booze that they drink. That movie,
Viper.
That's right. And the like the ex-marine who lives in the junkyard,
right?
Got the Shiv that he carved from a shin bone. There's some good stuff in that film. Like, we were like, oh, people get sucked into a toilet. I was like, no, there's some hardcore comic book DNA in street trash. It's quite something.
And what world is, like, you know, saying, oh, they got sucked into a toilet, a bad thing in a horror movie? Like that's like, why would you mark that against something?
Hasn't been done since.
For a movie.
You know, I think of horror toilets, I've got the Ghoulies come out, and then I've got street trash where they come in. And then there's an entire line of Japanese horror movies about Hanako from the toilet, which is an urban legend that there's a ghost in the girl's bathroom. They've made like an entire line of, you know, every movie is like, let's find a new reason to go into the girl's bathroom because there's a ghost in there.
Yeah.
So I know I've seen some other ones with pretty good, like, in fact, like, it's probably the only thing that was good about the movie, but like, I can't think of what they are right now.
I'm sure Ari Aster is on it. Like, the whole next movie is just the bathroom. The toilet is
toilet horror.
Toilet horror. I mean, he's got 2.5 hours to make it work. Nah, it's good stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't liken the Dead and the Damned to street trash, even though I do enjoy the energy of that movie. There's just like a swagger in that movie. It's just, how are you gonna make a movie about?
It was what it was, and it's also very much one of those movies that, like, it could only exist in that one moment in time, and that was it. Like, you can't remake it or anything. Like,
wasn't the director like a lauded video cinematographer?
Oh yeah, I think so. Well, and he wrote for Marvel at some point. Like, he wrote
this kind of weird auteur who, you know, had a career and was doing cinematography on big budget films, and then he was like, "I'm going to write my own movie."
I had to look this up. J. Michael Muro, he was the Steadicam operator, James Cameron's Steadicam operator of choice on The Abyss, Terminator 2, True Lies, and Titanic.
Yes. Damn. Like, not a slouch. But like, yeah. I said, you got to have it in you. That man is the thing he gave us is a movie that is undefinable, which I don't know how else to, like, to me, that's art.
Yeah. Right.
And for some reason, street trash is not on his Wikipedia filmography, but it is. He does show up.
You know, it's not up to the creator to label something as their greatest piece of art. That's for the audience.
And it seems like they failed. Oh, that's depressing.
Well, this may be a bit off topic, but the term, you know, you can't remake something like that. But they are remaking something from the 80s that I don't know how this film is currently being made, but they're remaking The Toxic Avenger.
I knew it. I knew that's what you were going to say.
With Peter Dinklage and Elijah Wood. I believe Elijah Wood being part of it because he's. Avenger? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, what's his name is doing it. God damn it. Like, he's directed a couple movies that were, like, really good. And I can't remember the movies or his name.
Not Troma, like, just kind of a, they got the right.
Macon Blair.
No, it's not a Troma movie.
Oh, is Macon a Toxic Avenger guy?
Yeah, it's starring Peter Dinklage, Kevin Bacon. And Elijah Wood.
Have you seen pictures of what Elijah Wood looks like in it?
He looks amazing.
Yeah, it does look pretty cool. When I first saw it, I was like, is that the penguin? Like, the picture I saw, like the angle. And then when I looked closer, I was like, oh.
He looks like a
I don't know.
Terrible little creep. And it's like, that's perfect. You know, he's having a time of his life right
now. I don't think they should remake it, but I'll watch it, you know. It might be good.
You know what? I mean, there's an artistic approach. There's like an artistic response where you're like, could you just make your own weird rubber toxic splatter movie? And then like my like industry mercenary side is like, that'll put some money in like trauma people's pockets, and God knows they can probably use it. Maybe we'll see a resurgence of kind of trauma, and these things get a second life. You know, it used to be through DVDs, but now it probably kind of has to be through, you know, a remake sparks some kind of trauma resurgence. Probably not.
I think that just the casting alone has brought a ton of like just, okay, this, I wouldn't want this, but this is, what is this? What is going to happen here?
You can't sell the, like, you know, the nostalgia factor that we feel and have to kind of fight. But like Seth Rogen has a stranglehold on like half of the 80s and 90s IPs. Like, he's, you know, that dude is just figured it out. And I think he genuinely has a lot of passion for these things and is also in a position to make some stuff happen. And, you know, that's the name of the game out there.
If you watch that new Turtles movie that I guess he produced.
Yeah.
Can't go to the movies
anymore. Well, yeah. It's good. Like, it's really, of all the Turtles stuff I've seen in the last whatever, I had a lot of fun watching that movie.
That's my main takeaway from it. It was just a lot of fun. You know, I brought my 7-year-old daughter to it. She was excited to see it, and it's just a lot of fun. Like, I know there's like, you know, a lot of the mutants are pretty different from like their original versions. I know some people are happy with that, but you know, I'm just like, it was still really fun, and like I'm the type of person kind of like eye rolls at needle drops in movies and stuff like that, but this one had like perfect ones. Like, they were like the best music cues I've seen in any movie, and I absolutely love their choices for the turtles. Those kids are just perfect, you know. And I'm really excited that, you know, my kids, like, this is going to be their turtles, because, you know, like every 5 to 10 years we get new turtles, you know, and that's what kind of bugs me a lot too about people complaining. It's like, you're going to get new turtles sooner or later, like, you know. It's going to happen. There's going to be a different version or whatever. There's still like another live action version.
No matter what they do, they're always going to come back.
Yeah.
For those four turtles. Like, they may go completely off somewhere else for like 10 years. Yeah. But then somebody's going to bring it back to that. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They're not going to shoot themselves in the foot and let money just shoot out of their toes, you know.
And, you know, it just, and, you know, not to make it all turtle talk, but like, just in the past few years, like, we've got the IDW series, which is amazing. You know, it's consistently good since its inception. And you have The Last Ronin, amazing book. You have Rise of the TMNT, you know, that animated series that people absolutely adore because it really leans into, like, you know, the crazy, almost anime style action with stuff and going really out there. And then you have, you know, this now. And then you also have, like, the 2012 series is still really beloved. And people are still getting a chance to go back to the early 2000s series.
And they're also doing the cartoon one now, too. The animated version, the Saturday morning turtle book or whatever. Yeah.
People are under on them just doing, like, just pulling a full Turtleverse and just bringing them all in on one.
Because that's I mean, they might... Because it seems like they've just about
they had an episode of the mid-2000s series do something like that, where they met the 87 Turtles or something like that.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that, but somebody was telling me about it.
They just got to let Jenny Tartakovsky do a Usagi Yojimbo.
Man,
casting, but
I would.
There's a lot of
money to that Kickstarter.
Yeah,
but not to bring it back to our comic, but I think a lot of nostalgia and like the argument, you know, the kind of sporting arguments of like, oh, you can't remake that, can't remake this. Like, it's all all fear of change is the fear of death, because when things change, when the turtles aren't your turtles, they're now the turtles for your kids and beyond. Like, you, all of those are markers in your life where you realize, oh my God, I'm old. And everyone knows what comes at the end of that sentence, which is where our book comes in, which is, if you had a second chance, if you came back, but not in full control, not some kind of second life, but you just had a chance to look back at your deeds and how the world was after your passing, no matter how great you thought you were. Sun rises, sun sets, and even if the world is populated by murderous skeletons, like, the people coming up behind you are, you know, are every bit as engaged in life as you were. And I think that there's just kind of a, like, let go of these things that have so much control over you, be they turtles or remakes or superheroes, and just, I don't know, just engage in the skeleton war around you.
Life is too short. Read good comics. And, you know, The Dead and the Damned, it's a damn good comic. It is currently live on Kickstarter now at funding. The campaign ends on November 1st. As of recording, you are almost at $6,000 of your $13,000 goal. If it's any consolation, anyone who's ever been on my show who had a Kickstarter has been funded. I don't know. I don't want to give any hope. But if I can somehow be a lucky rabbit's foot for people, I will gladly do that. Yeah, 26 days to go. That's still a long ways to go. You guys got New York Comic Con coming up.
Yeah, we've got a long way to go.
Lots of promo to be had. Lots of getting it out there. And hopefully I'll be able to add a few more numbers to your backers and spread the word, because I think this is a really awesome looking book. I want to read the full thing. I want to read the second issue, third issue, fourth issue, and see what else is going to come from Ghost Flying Press. Before we wrap up, we actually did get a Twitter question, and that is from Bud and previous guest Grim Wilkins, who just had their own Kickstarter wrap up, an amazing artist. He wants to know, what's your favorite skull from anything in the animal kingdom?
That is a good question.
That is a good question.
I really like horse skulls. I find them weird because the way the teeth, like, only the teeth meet at the front. And there's this huge, like, gap in between their teeth. And it has this very, I don't even know. Sorry, it's getting late over here. I've lost the words to describe a horse skull. But there's something very odd, because horses are so beautiful and they're so powerful and just these gorgeous creatures. And then there's this, like, really silly looking skull behind them. I don't know. I think I saw it once as a kid, and it triggered in my mind that, like, oh, everyone has a skull underneath their skin.
Yeah.
So everyone's smiling all the time. Like, just that. And every time I see a horse, I'm like, you've got a really silly skeleton underneath that.
What post was this I read? We're just brains piloting a skeleton mecha with a meat armor.
right.
Your reasoning is that goes a lot behind my choice, and that is squirrel skulls. Have you ever seen a squirrel skull? It's just so tiny and ridiculous. It's just like, I understand, like, the physiology of, like, why a small animal like that needs bones and things like that, but it's also like, you're so small, why do you need bones? What are you?
You little fuck, why do you need bones?
I just looked it up. That is adorable.
Just screaming at squirrels in the backyard. Why do you have bones?
I live right next to a park. Like, how have I never seen a squirrel skull? Kelly, you've drawn like 8 million skulls. Do you have a favorite?
I'm terrible at favorites. I goat skulls are like the easy go-to for me, but anything with horns, I'm like. But also, I never really realized it, but I think I have a small obsession with cat skulls because I love the eye socket area. Like, it's so enormous. And those eyes are, they don't look that enormous. So, like, I don't know. Like, it's this whole character, like, all to itself and everything. And, like, there's so many ways you could make that look goofy as fuck, or you can make it look creepy, you know, like, I don't know, cat skulls are cool. I got to one of those the cricket crafting thing, you know, so you can do like vinyl on shirts and stuff like that. And you know, they sell them at departments or like Walmart and stuff. But I got one, and the only shirt I've ever made, I made one shirt, and it was it has a cat skull on it, and it just says cats are cool. And like, I don't even know like why I made it, but
have you not printed up a million of those? Like, every person I know would want one.
I'm lazy.
That's the epic loot you drop.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. Now it just got really dark. It was like, when you die, you drop that shirt.
It's on theme.
Cats are cool, though.
Yeah.
I really want that shirt. That's going to be great.
I'll make you one.
Please do.
Well, there you go. I expect to see photos of you guys at New York rocking your Cats Are Cool shirts, handing out ash cans. since it is getting super late, I will wrap it up here. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Please go check out The Dead and the Damned on Kickstarter. Links will be in the descriptions and show notes and all that. Gentlemen, now is the time to let everyone know where they can find you on social media. I'll make sure there's links to all that in the show notes as well.
You can find me on probably all 450 social media sites, including X. I've never called it that. I'm on Twitter, Treebeard. That's B-E-E-R-D. Put a Y at the end of it, and that's Instagram and probably something else. I hate this.
Like, one handle that works across every social media. It's very annoying.
It's a pain, especially now that we're having to dip our toes into 50 of them. I also just want to say, apparently next week the Gold Key Boris Karloff book comes out. I drew something in that. And go to your comic shop and order Skeeters from Man Cave. Issue 1's in order books now. Comes out in December.
Kelly's blowing up.
And, then, you know, more importantly, though, The Dead and the Damned. Bracket.
All right.
The Dead and the Damned, we're about halfway through. I think by the end of the campaign we'll be within spitting distance. I think digital comps will be available pretty soon after the campaign ends. We're kind of heading into the holiday season at that point, but like, I'll be updating people, and like, this book is definitely going to get made. When we print, you know, we'll probably, the estimates on the Kickstarter themselves is like April. I actually think we might be able to get a little ahead of that. I just didn't want to make any promises that I don't know we can keep. I'll be probably doing the fulfillment here. So if I figure out how to do a live stream, watch me stuff envelopes and just talk comics, that would be fun. But
you could just be like one of those animal enclosures of cameras that you can look at.
I mean, we'll figure it out, right? I mean, the making the comic is the fun part. Getting the comic to the fine folks out there is going to be something else. But I'm excited for it. I really want to kind of revel in the full experience of making this comic and give people something that they can enjoy, and also just, you know, the experience of like having been there from the backing all the way through to the fulfillment, I think is going to be really great. I'm loving every minute of this, even though I've been tired in my life, and this is definitely one of the most tired I've ever been. But you can follow me on also on Twitter or Instagram. SGIRNER is my personal, and then Goats Flying Press, one word together, except on Twitter, where the 15 character limit means it's Goats Flying without a G press. But it's the same orange black goat on an orange background logo across all social media. You should be able to find us, and we're going to be pushing the Dead on the Dam pretty hard over the course of obviously October. But I might start giving people a little sneak peek at some other stuff that we might want to do in the future, just to kind of keep it interesting. But we are extremely dedicated to the Dead and the Damned, and it's going to be the best book. I'm going to send it to everyone next year. I will drive it to the Eisners and peek through their mailbox. Not because I think it'll win necessarily, even though it should, but just because I want them to know.
I want them to acknowledge me.
Want them to know what they missed.
Awesome. Well, Sebastian, Kelly, thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, go check out The Dead and the Damned on Kickstarter now. Like I said, there'll be links to all that stuff in the show notes below. Gentlemen, once again, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yep.